It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back, Football Monday. So is this one pretty much all good? For a half, it was not all good. It was not good at all, actually. It's a better way to put it. But then, completely, in the second half, the game flipped. And the Bills have so much more offensive, if not also defensive, but certainly offensive potential than the Titans. When the Titans were kind of doing their thing, it was rollout bootleg passes to Chigakonkwo and two or three other tight ends I'm not even sure I could name. But that's just my sort of being, you know, why do I need to care about the tennis? That's a bad attitude, bad job by me. But that's sort of like their high point. And when the Bills took their turns, Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, it was much more productive than that. I read that Cooper was not on the field for any of Coleman's targets.
Okay.
There might be a little bit of a thought that Cooper sort of opened up Coleman, but they were not on the field together when the ball went to Coleman. Now, obviously, that's not true the other way around. Cooper's touchdown was a play where Coleman kind of told him where to go.
Coleman was lined up on his left. Yeah, that's certainly what it looked like was happening there. I would expect that will change here as Cooper gets, fully up to speed here. And, you know, we'll see if the... the pecking order should change. I think Mac Hollins is the candidate to be displaced the most here. I mean, he's played like crazy all year here. And his role is to block and, you know, catch the odd pass here or there. And he hasn't been, you know, non-existent for them, but it's just not like a winning championship caliber offense should not feature a player like Mac Hollins on the field 70 or 80% of the time. Just shouldn't. And I think Cooper hopefully directly addresses that, because the other guys, I think, just all offer more. You know, they I'm sure none of them offer as much in the run game as a blocker. And that isn't nothing. This team has had the luxury of a starting wide receiver like Gabe Davis, who was, you know, his own challenge as a pass catcher, but he was on the field all the time because of his all-around game and his ability to engage as a blocker. I just think they've got better receivers here now, especially with Cooper here. And I don't know, poor Curtis Samuel. Like, he goes out of this game, and I didn't even think about it once. I really didn't. No, I really don't mean to be jerky about the guy. But,
well, he has 12 catches.
Who's missing that? I mean, get me Shakir and Coleman and Cooper, and I feel like I've got a three-receiver set like I can work with there. Like, Cooper gives them experience on the boundary. Coleman is still so raw. We don't know, like, what he knows and doesn't know exactly. I mean, we're not privy to that kind of information, just how flexible they can eventually be with him, where he can line up, and just different things that he can do. But he's coming along nicely.
It is pretty exciting right now with him.
Yeah. Like, that was a breakthrough game. You've seen big plays now from him a couple weeks, you know, two out of 3 weeks. I mean, no, 3 weeks in a row you're getting it. And that is, yeah, that's starting to percolate a little bit. And, I mean, Cooper's point of entry here just couldn't be better timed, I think, with that in mind. So I would expect those three dudes should be your leading snap percentage guys and your leading target guys among the wide receivers.
He has...
Kincaid had a nice day too yesterday.
Sorry. Coleman has three catches or more, or a touchdown in every game but one, Miami. I mean, that's not breaking records or anything. It's not Brian Thomas. Sorry, but it's pretty exciting right now. Like, 4 for 125, he had the big touchdown in Houston. You know, also one against Jacksonville, and in the other games, except for the Miami game where they didn't really need any passing attack, he's got three catches or more, three or four is what it is, in each one. So, yeah, I feel like for almost halfway through a rookie season, I think they're probably in a good place there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you probably, if you extrapolate over the year, it's not going to be numbers that I would have said, oh, I'm signing up for that for the year. You would have hoped for more. I think he's on pace for like maybe 40 catches or so. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, increases. Like what we've been through here has been the ramping up of the rookie receiver, and maybe it'll get to be more. I don't know. I'm getting greedy now, I think. I'm a little bit of a runaway train with this in mind. Like, oh, they're going to throw it to Cooper like crazy. Throw it to Shakir. Throw it to Coleman. This isn't a team that is throwing it like crazy. They ended up yesterday only running it 20 times, which is weird in a game that they won as handily as they did, but really their passing game got them going in the second half of this game, and they even used it really to put the game away as opposed to just hammering Cook and Davis and Johnson in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I like that. 20 yards per catch, at least for Coleman, if it's not going to be more than 40 catches. Big impact plays. Here is Scott with us. Hi, Scott.
Hi, guys. Listen, I'm afraid of our time management again at the end of the first half with McDermott not using timeouts when we had Tennessee pinned. You know, I guess at the end of the day, it worked out because we went 3-and-out after they punted. But, I mean, why doesn't the guy use timeouts? Why are we going into the locker room with 2 on the board still? What are we doing?
Well, let's see. 10-7 is the score. Two-minute warning. The two-minute warning happens in the middle of the drive. They're at their own 26-yard line. They're nowhere on offense up to this point in the game except for two plays.
Yeah.
And one thing in his defense, in the Bills' defense, is they've been excellent in the third quarter, like generally his whole tenure. Like they're a good team coming out of the break. Adjustments and whatnot, you know, tend to go their way. So there was one thing that I saw there that I tweeted about that I found curious, but it wasn't like that high on the outrage scale for me.
What was that?
That drive. They punted on 4th-and-1 with a minute to go in the half from their 33. And that's one where you'd think Allen would be automatic. The criticism is fair.
You really?
I think
timeouts there? Because I'm looking at 3rd-and-8 with a minute 56 to go. Where do I? That's plenty of time. Like, if I convert there, I've got 3 timeouts, and I'm moving down the field. I'm going to get in scoring position. I don't need to call a timeout at 1:56 like at all. There's a ton of time.
Well, what you need to do is go for it on 4th-and-1.
Well, okay, sure. That's a different thing.
That's connected. That's a different thing. You're right. You don't need the timeout. I think it's more, the criticism for me, to my ears, was more just like the mentality.
Well,
giving up.
Well, I think you're mixing in your criticism to the caller was just time management. They're not calling timeouts.
Okay.
And I don't think there was any point in that drive where they needed to call a timeout.
Okay, well, I agree with that.
So, but yeah, and I'm fine with critiquing, you know, a 4th-and-1 at your 33 as well.
The thing that I saw wasn't either of these things. It was another example. You don't get many. It was another example of Allen jogging to the sideline as the 2-minute warning is coming and the Bills are not stopping the clock or hurrying up or doing anything. They're taking the 2-minute warning. Mm-hmm. And he gets to the sideline and he's looking maybe toward McDermott's direction. It's more of the camera is on McDermott walking toward where Allen is standing. And they both sort of like jerk their heads away from each other. Like there's just never any interaction between them.
Yeah.
And I point that out. Of course, I get, you know, a lot of so what. And maybe it is so what. I don't know. But it's just so weird that you never see them
huddled up
talking at all. Like, and there was one where this is a strategy moment. The 2-minute, what are we going to do here? And they just have no use for each other.
Right.
Like, McDermott is walking toward Allen and almost like he doesn't realize it. He just turns to the left. Like, oh, I'm going to walk over here instead. Like, just really, is it worth caring about? I guess that's a choice you can make. For me, it's just like, to me, that's an interesting observation. I don't need to tell you. I'm not trying to get any points out of it.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do? Go on with Nick Wright? I'm 52. I'm raising teenagers in Buffalo. You think I'm angling for clicks or anything? No. It's just like, why do the head coach and the quarterback never interact?
Yeah. At least on
right.
the sidelines
well,
during games. Right.
That's a pretty good opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
Here, what are we doing, coach? You know, here's what we're doing, Josh. 2 minutes to go in the half, but If they did interact, it's just always off camera. It's never, never seen.
Yeah, I wonder. I did notice that yesterday too. I don't know that it's you in my head about it, but that I saw that at the end of the half myself. I didn't see you tweet about it. I was watching. I'm like, huh? Well, yeah, I might have even thought to myself, I'll bet he's going to tweet about it because you're always sort of tuned into that. I mean, some people. I'm reluctant to speculate any further, but it is curious, and I wonder if it's just, listen, anything that you have to tell me isn't going to help right now. If you're going to tell me to be careful, I don't need to, like swing thought. I'm playing. I'm talking to Joe.
And McDermott would know this,
right? I think might sort of. Even respect it. Like, okay, that's your thing. I don't want to mess with it. But I don't know.
I just wish you could get an answer out of McDermott about it. You know, in the past he said, I talk to Josh every day. And, you know, maybe he does. But I don't know. It just seems odd that you just never see them interact. And listen, I mean, it's about the Bills. So, of course, lots of Bills fans are going to make it come back at me because for one reason or other, it doesn't matter. That's what I get told, is something like this that could be, that's negative. Well, that doesn't matter. And that's fine if you think that. Did you think it when Aaron Rodgers blew off Robert Saleh all the time? If it happened to the Jets, did you think it was meaningless or did you think, wow, that's a bad sign?
Mm-hmm.
And Allen hasn't been that obvious. Like, he hasn't gone to any sort of physical extent.
Right.
So it's just something I wonder about. But if you only think it's meaningless because it's the Bills doing it, then I've got no time for it. If it's something maybe that's not a great sign, then it's worth talking about. Or, maybe it's nothing at all. Maybe it's both non-existent.
Right.
And yeah. whatever. Just seems weird.
Yeah.
Well, moving on. Because, who's going to want to talk about it? I like that they showed yesterday, whether you want to give credit to, and you can give credit to lots of different people. Cooper, which means Bean even, Coleman, Allen, Brady. I like that they showed that they can sort of really punch with a team. This is not one. Even the Jet game. When was the last time? It would be the first half against the Jaguars. The last time that they looked, and they looked great there, and there was a mismatch. But that's the last time the Bills' passing offense has really looked good at all.
Yeah, that's right. That's three entire games plus the first half yesterday.
Right. Baltimore, Houston, Jets.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. The most encouraging thing, that's why that word, what word did we settle on in the first segment? I forget.
Outclass.
I like encouraged because the passing game did really perk up. And I hope that all the arrows are just pointing up with Cooper's arrival and the more that he'll get to know and just whatever they've been trying to do differently from, say, last year to this year with Brady having a full off season, there is also some of the passing game, the stuff that's all parallel to the line of scrimmage, is pretty new this year, I feel like. So they still might be even in the process of feeling out what they like best, what Allen works best with, and getting more familiar with all of that. I hope that it's all just building. That's what you want, I think, with new moving parts in so many areas here that, this year, this was out there in the summer. It could be a season that starts slow and they're going to have to, find their groove as everybody sort of reacclimates to different roles or new roles entirely, new people in different places and all that sort of stuff. There's still an opportunity for them to grow here. They don't have to be even who they were yesterday. Just as you go here, what works best? Should we ease off on the six offensive linemen? Sort of like what Dennis was talking about when he called in the second hour of the show. I think that was, they're using so many different things. Sometimes I think you can get overly attracted to, we're going to use this and this and this and this personnel and this personnel. you got to find out what you really do best. And I think they're probably still in the process of doing that. And now they've just onboarded a brand new receiver who should go right to the top of the pecking order. And so that even is something to sort of integrate and figure out how to best deploy. And I think this year, maybe unlike the other years where it was, we know who we are, we know what we do, let's go do it. Like, there's more of a still a feeling out that's happening here, even seven games into a season.
Just looking over some of my notes from yesterday, the Bills won the coin toss and took the ball, which I'm not sure it's never worked out for them, but kind of famously, the Denver game, was they tried that last year.
Fumbled on the first offensive play, and that was that. And yeah, I don't remember if that's the last time they did it, but three and outs ensued from taking the ball.
McDermott said yesterday that it was because of the wind.
Right.
And then he went on to say, he didn't say that was dumb, but he's like, you can't really predict the wind, though. Like, maybe he learned not to try to do that. I don't know. But that's what his explanation was for taking. At least it wasn't like momentum garbage or just some sort of like making statements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason why teams almost always defer. It's because it's better strategy. But they wanted the wind advantages. They had it in the fourth quarter, which they didn't really need, I guess. But that was what he said, in case you didn't know, for why they did it. Christina is next. Hello.
Hey, so I kind of had 2 points. I was thinking about how we don't really get started until the second half. It's great how it worked out yesterday, but if we play like a really good team, as we have seen, I don't really think that's going to work out too good for us, you know, taking so long to kind of get started. And then my second point was, I really like Ray Davis. I feel like he gives us energy the way Fred Jackson kind of used to give us energy. He kind of like pumps me up when I watch him, when I see him run. And I would kind of like to see him in the offense more. I was wondering how you guys felt about that, like splitting carries more with Cook.
I hope we're tracking there, Christina. I agree with everything you've said here. I think after last week's breakthrough performance against the Jets, I think I definitely said, I think you're going to see more of Davis. I think he's earned it. But then there was an injury this week, so it was even in doubt that he was going to play at all. And he was healthy enough to play, obviously, so he did and came through again later in the game. But it was a modest, like, it was not like, you know, he just didn't get a lot based off last week. And I think the injury could have mitigated that. I think we're tracking towards him getting more. I don't think it's going to be a split. They value Cook, and I do too. But I like the way Davis runs. I think the energy is really good. The power, he's just always getting you closer, and I really like that about how he does it.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't know he was injured, so yeah, I was wondering why we didn't see him more. I saw a couple snaps, but yeah. So hopefully, once he's healthy, we'll see him a bit more.
Right on. Thanks. I mean, if he ends up. If he's going to play more, that has to cut into Cook. You know, it's, I guess, mm-hmm. a question of how you want it to end up, and every game situation is different, but I'm definitely also on Team Davis. 5 carries for him yesterday, 41 yards and a score, 22-yard long. He caught a pass. Cook, who also scored, was 12 for 32 and was not targeted in the game. So bring on Ray Davis. Not quite yet where you want to start him, although sometimes in these very difficult economic times with injuries. I admit that I had to in one or two cases yesterday, but got lucky because he got in.
You got something there. Yeah, right.
Lots more injury news, of course. The big one is Brandon Ayuk, who we spent a lot of time on in the offseason, but what happened? He dragged it on with the 49ers until right before the season, signed the big contract, eventually got it, has really not played well for San Francisco. He's had one good game, and then yesterday, second quarter, I think it was, yeah. Torn ACL, done for the year. How bad a shape are they in, San Fran?
There was a lot of your name here in their passing game in the second half of that game. Debo left that game too.
Sick.
So without McCaffrey, without Debo, without Ayuk, I mean, it was... They got Pearsall back. He was active for the first time, but I don't know that much happened there at all.
Jacob Cowing.
Yeah. they might be in tough. I mean, it's Kansas City, and their defense can lock up a lot of people. But
I wonder if we'll see McCaffrey. What week, like week 12 or something that is, or 13? December 1st is the date, Bills and Niners. I wonder what happens there. I mean, they have to push.
Yeah, they do.
Defending NFC champs, they're not going to just call off the season at 3-4. And they're probably still good enough to win a few more games. In which case, you'd think McCaffrey, if he can do it, will become active and get in there.
But has there even been any I'm sure there has. I just have not really seen it. I don't know it. Like, what the target is for him. What's realistic for him to come back?
Week 9, I've seen.
Okay.
He went to Germany for the special treatment.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anything bad since then, like that he's not going to make it. Maybe we'll find something out this week for him, but... Yep, this is week 8. San Francisco, a game behind Seattle, who the Bills play this week. They are on bye. No, they have Dallas on Sunday night, the Niners, and then they're on bye. That's pretty good. Give me Dallas, Pittsburgh. I'm a fraud. Give me Dallas, San Francisco. You know, on one day, it's always the same teams on primetime, the Steelers, who are always boring, the Cowboys, who are maybe bad now. But those two matchups, or Green Bay would be another
totally
one.
Totally work for you.
Every time. No exceptions. Dallas, San Francisco, Sunday night, I'm ready. That's in San Francisco. 803-0550, Football Monday. Ray Davis, McDermott, Allen, some of the details from yesterday's game, and then Amari Cooper, the bigger picture stuff, too. We'd love to hear from you next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
We have to maintain that same energy and focus that we had on the first series as we do those next two. So the second half piece of things is very encouraging, but we need to come out and start faster. And, you know, the guys have done a good job grasping of what the offense is trying to do to us at halftime, but we need to do that a little bit sooner.
Bobby Babich, defensive coordinator, the Bills at 5-2, they run away from Tennessee yesterday, 34-10. Overall, good day, including Tyler Bass, who made everything.
Yep, 6-for-6. All right, 4 extra points, 2 field goals. I mean, nothing that was a severe test or anything, but he's mishit a couple of extra points pretty badly. So, yeah, it was good to see him come through like that.
They did have a kicker or two in during the week. Lucas Havrisik was one. It was reported yesterday that they did have a competition, and that Bass won it during the week.
Right, they put that guy's on. They signed somebody to the practice squad.
He was signed to the practice squad.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I heard. Yeah, competition. Like, did that really decide the way it was presented on the telecast? Was that that decided who was going to kick? Though whoever was doing the talking there, I don't remember which of the three announcers in the booth it was, said they had a competition and Bass won, so he's kicking today. And I was like, was that really, like, it was a contest to see who was going to kick today? I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I mean, they meet with these guys. We don't, I don't know.
You know, wasn't high pressure, like you sort of said, but if you're struggling mentally, everything is, you know, no kick is like a gimme.
Yeah.
And the shorter they are, the more egregious they are to miss.
Right.
So good for him.
And last week was certainly a pressure kick. I mean, the game-winning kick against the Jets. So he came through there, too. So hopefully he's on the right track here.
Yeah, I just think it will be very hard for them to find somebody. Forget even the cap, because there's a cap penalty, too, if you were to move on him. That isn't great. But I think it would be very hard to find somebody that they should have more confidence in. You know, like a lot of these teams just sort of run through kickers. The Lions have done it a lot. Green Bay just did it. San Francisco had an injury, and then they had a different guy last week and a different guy yesterday. And I think they're just sort of hitting and hoping, you know, like these are guys with some experience, and maybe he'll be the one. But, you know, odds would be that eventually there's a miss or two, and then you're kind of right back where you were. I mean, it was a nice – I don't even really to say was – it's been a nice luxury having Bass be so good for several years. You know, you just don't have to play that game. And now it's just more sounding like last week certainly sounded like the Bills were ready to play that game, but ultimately didn't.
He's going to have to really string together. I think at any point this year, if it crops up. And and what does that even say? I mean, he's probably going to miss a kick somewhere along the line here. You know, they may ask him to try a 58-yarder or something. And guys make those in the league every week. It seems like there's just ordinary, oh, it's a 52-yarder. Oh, it would have been good from 70 is what it looks like on TV half the time with these kickers. But he really needs to, I think, to quell not just the noise out here and the fans being concerned about it. I think organizationally they've acted the way they should here. Like, this isn't good enough, and we got to be ready to do something if we need to do it. So let's get a guy in here that we at least feel confident enough in. I mean, that can change. I imagine this guy's going to be practicing and kicking, and if he's terrible in these practices, maybe they'll be back to workouts and try another guy. But Bass needs to, like, really stay out of the ditch, I'd say, for the rest of the year, which is a big ask. But because as soon as he can make 10 more in a row, and if they need one and he misses it, the fire is just going to be at five alarm status already, right? As soon as it'll be no time for it to ignite and smolder. It'll just be burning. At least out here. I don't know how internally they'll be if he makes a bunch in a row and then misses one and be like, well, that's kickers. That happens.
That's kind of how I'd expect to feel.
Yeah, but I just think in order to get all the way to like where you were with him 2 years ago, say, he just needs a real good run here, I think, to sort of stabilize so that everyone's default setting as soon as he misses one isn't, oh, here we go, you know, is prior to really last year. You know, whatever he would miss, be like, well, you know, you're not going to make them all. But this guy's good. He's got a big leg. He's dependable and all of that. That's been very rocky this year. So he's still got a lot of work to do. But yet, you know, last 2 weeks have been good for him. The big kick last week and then yesterday. And I this came up on post. I appreciate that fans wanted to show him some love in the stadium and cheer for him. You know, it's not usually how we are about stuff. And I'm not saying it was everyone. It's a little maybe Pollyanna-ish. They're like, oh, he's struggling. Get behind him and love him up. But I feel like you could notice that, and that's to the credit of the people there. I mean, I'm glad that they got there with enough people to make it noticeable, I'd say.
It is, you have to, the word is normalize, like for the era. You have to consider how great kickers are now. Like it's such a tough standard. I was even this way before the couple of misses more recently that seemed to force him into being a topic, you know, because he's 84% for his career on all field goals. Like what? He makes 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 7 field goals, some in between mm-hmm. those two numbers. And that's damn good. I mean, that's like, it's better than Steve Christie. Right? I mean, it's just Steve Christie was great. Seemed like automatic.
Right.
Big kicks. Did he ever, I mean, he was just like,
yeah.
The one, I don't know. I don't have to go here, but I'm thinking of this now just like for the first time. He missed one. Christie missed one against the Chargers that opening day with mm-hmm. Johnson and right. before Flutie.
Yep.
And like, oh my God, that's never happened. Like, right. when does yep. he ever, out in the dirt, probably the dirt infield in mm-hmm. San Diego?
I can remember, see it.
Has the show ever sounded older
I,
than?
I can still see it.
Than yes. San Diego or dirt fields?
I remember it, yeah.
But anyway, it's just like, that was, I don't know if Christie was like the best. In those years, it was always sort of being updated who the all-time most accurate kicker was. Because there's always somebody young
mm-hmm.
who came along, oh, this guy's at 82%. He's the best ever. And then the next year, it'd be someone else. And he was in there. He was in that, mm-hmm. I think, in that rotation there when he was with the Bills, at least for a bit. But Bass is better than the best kickers of those days.
Right.
But in terms of just the percentages.
Well, what's the going rate now, right? Like 84%, you don't have the market cornered on being the best in the league at 84%. I would think. Neither are you dead last or anything, but I'll bet you're somewhere in the middle of the pack. I'm just guessing, but it's not something I've looked at, but I would guess that that's about where you end up.
This year, Tucker is 76 mm. for Baltimore, mm. 76%, which is worse.
Yes, it is.
Tennessee's kicker, Nick Folk.
Mm-hmm.
We go back with Nick Folk.
Dallas.
2007 Dallas, the winning field goal, Nick Folk as a rookie for Wade.
Man.
That game. I mentioned this to my wife yesterday. because we were both into the Cleveland baseball team then with all the Bisons that had come up. Mm-hmm. And they're playing like the same night they were playing the ALCS against the Yankees, same night as Dallas Buffalo. She was also hospitalized for something. Like, it was a memorable time in our lives and hers. And so she would remember that game. Like, you know this kicker? This guy goes back to that night. And I think she was impressed with that. She's like, wow, you really know your sports. You should get a job in sports. Seattle this week. Interesting section of the schedule here. Seattle, Miami, and then Indianapolis. Miami lost to Indianapolis yesterday in a game that sounded pretty raunchy. 16-10 Colts.
Yeah.
It's not going well with Anthony Richardson passing-wise. He did run, I think, 14 times yesterday. And I don't know if it's right to say that that won them the game or anything like that. They're without Jonathan Taylor, too. But you've got big, always this is the case, I guess, but injury stuff with Metcalf this week. And Seattle coach there said he still will try to play this week, even though it was described as week to week. So Metcalf is not dead for this game. Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle have just done almost nothing with Tua out. But now they get Tua back. They play Arizona and then come to Buffalo next week. And we'll see on Taylor and the Colts, who right now, even though it seems like with Richardson they're not getting much done, are 4-3. Better than a lot of teams you like.
What's that now?
Better than the Jets.
Oh, the Jets. Yeah, the Jets. I love the Jets.
The Bengals. They're a game up on the Bengals.
I kind of like the Bengals.
Miami. Chargers playing tonight. Denver. My Broncos, who rolled to a win over New Orleans. And now they play Carolina at home. Denver.
I predict the Colts will top out at 8 wins. I just don't believe. I don't believe in it. I mean, as excited about Richardson as we both were, right? I thought I would have taken him first in that draft year before last. It's been a struggle. It doesn't have to stay that way. Like, if he gets the year and can stay on the field, that's already been a problem again this year. It gets harder and harder. It really tests you. I think, like, fans of that team would be like, I got this guy. He's big. He's super athlete. He runs really great. He'll figure out the passing. Josh Allen exists. We can make this work. You got to be able to just stay on the field. Like, to get the benefit of learning and improving and recognizing and all the stuff you need, you got to be able to keep playing. And it just, you know, he did get through this game yesterday. So, I mean, that's a start, I guess. But, man, it's just fits and starts constantly with him. It would get I'd be very frustrated, I think, already with him if I were really into the Colts.
It's interesting, though, that they've kept above water, right? Like, it's not the Carolina thing where, I mean, shouldn't Bryce Young probably go back in? They have one win. What's the point?
Right.
Yeah. So it's not like that.
Right.
Tennessee with Levis, maybe. This year's guys, look at the top of the draft. Caleb Williams has really come along. Mm-hmm. Jaden Daniels has been incredible. He's week to week, by the way, now. Great. And then May.
May went in and played pretty well.
I like him.
Yeah.
Doesn't he look good?
Yeah, he did. I didn't like him coming out, but he looked at least decent in his first start, I would say. And there's not a lot happening there to help them. I mean, their line is a joke, and their skill position players, they don't exist, really. They've just got nothing.
This Jalen Polk?
Just can't catch the ball.
Can't seem to catch the ball.
In the doghouse, Baker isn't even getting dressed, I don't think. I never see him. I don't know if I'm not studying their inactive list, but I have a feeling they got a long way to go with both of those guys.
No, it's Hunter Henry, but then it's Polk. And that's not going well. Then it's Bourne.
Right.
And Pop Douglas. And then KJ Osborne. UB, he had a touchdown yesterday in that game. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. You're welcome to join us. Talk about yesterday's Bills win. 803-0550 is the number. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. Football Monday on WGR. The Bills at 5-2, 2.5 games ahead of their nearest pursuer in the AFC East. That is Miami, which is getting its quarterback back this week. Jets at 2-5 after another just delicious slash disastrous loss by them. And New England, what, 1-6?
Yeah.
Beat the Bengals in Cincinnati week one. That's it.
At least they got the right quarterback on the field now for them.
Yes,
I agree. They're still that is going to bear watching. Not this year, but watch him this year to like draw conclusions on how worried you want to be about him moving forward. But he looked good yesterday.
Eddie is next. Hello.
Hey, thanks guys for taking the call. A couple of comments. I thought those catches by Kincaid really showed a different level of ability level. Those were high end catches by him. So I was really glad to see that. And I think the Jets are a real poster card a poster team for the fact that, yeah, talented players are really important. But if you don't have organization and scheme and all that stuff that we kind of poo-poo sometimes, you can see it. That's why Pittsburgh is perennially a good team, whether they've got all the bells and whistles talent-wise. You need both. You need the construction of the team hierarchy. Players need to know where that lies, and they play better when it's there. And the Jets are just a prime example. If you can put as many talented players on the field as you want, you're not going to get the result, guys. So, I think that says a lot. So, thanks, guys.
Sure.
All right.
If Zach Wilson were good, they would have a great culture. If Zach Wilson were one of these guys this year, they'd be fine. I'm not saying that all that stuff has to be false. I just think the talent, and the quarterback is not even, like, Breece Hall is good, but that doesn't carry the same weight. What they did that makes it obvious that they're dysfunctional is make the Rodgers bet. And once you do that, he's your whole franchise. He determines what they're going to do at every turn. I didn't realize it had to be quite that bad when they got him. But then it was still like, if he can play, they might be all right. And he missed the whole year last year, another year older. So, I always think the same thing about this. Like, it's so easy to say it. There's it's somewhat based in reality, but what was this team's culture before Allen, all right, here's this guy is great. And now you're taking winning seriously. Players want to play for your team. It exponentially grows, and sure, discipline and that other stuff. Caller includes scheme in this. That's coaching. I mean, the Jet coaching stuff has been a disaster too.
Yeah.
And so get that right, and I think I would say the Bills have also gotten that right.
Well, the thing about Allen, of course, elevated everyone here, McDermott and Bean included, to contender status. But how you phrase that, I don't know that you exactly intended it, but it sort of discredits what McDermott and Bean built that they brought Allen into. Like, the support they've provided him, the stability they've provided him, is non-existent with the Jets. And that started when he got here, not when he was great. Like, it helped him, I think, become great. And the Jets have had none of that. The little fiefdoms, and just the owner is not, I don't think, reliable, probably too emotional, just not. They're a mess. You end up where you end up. I mean, they were desperate and they made a deal. I won't say a deal with the devil because that's a little preposterous, but they went out on a limb and empowered, I think, a deteriorating egomaniac. 2-5.
You put it that way, it's amazing that it isn't working.
Right.
Yeah, of course I bought into it, so I'm accountable for that. And I still don't think they're dead.
I definitely do.
Yeah. Well, you've been right.
And I did kind of forget about my earlier today when I said 3.5 game lead. I'm thinking about the Jets, not Miami. Miami's had their bye. They're 2-4. So
yeah, Jets are 3.
They're closer. Yeah.
Unless you want to include the fact that the Bills have beaten those teams.
That's why I said the half a game. Yeah,
I see.
Right.
803-0550. We'll look for your calls again after sports. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog WGR.